3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Illuminati Social Club. I'm your host, Jason from Parma. Joining me tonight for probably one of the scarier conversations we could possibly have is David Chafin, pastor of North Eaton Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in North Eaton, Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good to meet you. I'm well.
So we've met before. You have to put up with my girlfriend in your congregation. Hi, dear. She'll be listening. So.
Oh no! All right. I'll try to keep it clean then.
So, for me, this all came up when you started your Skin of My Teeth blog and started talking about. Let me get this correct here. You were talking about one of your posts was just sickened in my soul by our national urge toward establishment of religion, which not definitely a subject that's not I'm not very fond of myself, and it's a frightening one because honestly, what people don't realize, you know, even when they think, you know, well, what's so bad about that is it's bad because it's only a minority of people who would actually want this.
Yeah.
So. Go ahead.
But the numbers are what's frightening to me. I mean, I'm seeing the latest poll that has any credibility to it showing 10% of Americans are avowed Christian nationalists, an additional 19% are sympathetic to its ideals. So if you put that together, that's pushing a third.
It's just over a quarter. I mean,
yeah.
And yet somehow, some way we have a loud enough minority in Congress who are pushing this agenda. That is, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, yeah. Lauren Boebert, Jim Jordan, who is from our neck of the woods.
Yeah. They're driving the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And just for full disclosure here, I'm an atheist. I do not believe in God.
I'm aware.
But I am, and here's the thing. And this is for, you know, primarily the more Christian leaning listeners out there. When I say atheist, it just means I don't believe in God. It doesn't mean I hate God. It doesn't mean I hate religion. I actually love religion. I enjoy learning about religion. I enjoy studying it. I follow on one of my Twitter accounts, I follow a priest, a couple of rabbis, four pastors, several atheists, and you know, to me, it's, you know, yeah, it sounds like the start of a joke. But, you know, the thing is, everyone that I follow, whether religious or not, all have the same concern. I follow you on Twitter. And yeah, we all have the same concern about this blatant and... You know, I just have to say, disgusting push towards this Christian nationalism, which, by the way, when I say Christian nationalism, when anyone says Christian nationalism, it has nothing to do with Christianity.
Right.
It's about authoritarianism.
That's it.
It's about pushing an agenda of, you know, wanting, you know, because, well, these, a lot of these people, you know, their God hates everything that they hate.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just.
And to create a theocracy in which that can be propounded is the obscenity of it all in light of our history as a nation. It reflects more the movements that we've seen in fascist Europe in decades past, and what you see in some of the worst examples of modern Islam.
Yes.
That's just frightening. There's no getting around it. It is being taken up by power brokers and the big mouths anyway. So wielding a big cudgel.
Yes. So who are some of the big names in your mind? I've seen some of my own. I look mainly at you have Dennis Prager out there, a lot of these Fox News. I mean, you have Turning Point USA, Daily Caller. I mean, all these extreme right wing ideologues. And I'm not even gonna say Newsmax, because I think they're nothing. I mean, they can't get a platform anymore. But
the voices that I'm hearing, because my limited time for searching for good things like that, are coming out from members of Congress, especially, and the people who are capitalizing on what's happening there in that very divided house. And they're doing it. It's a kind of a chicken and egg thing for me, Jason. I'm not sure what the source of it is, other than there's some Christian fundamentalism buried in it. But there's something else. There's something, I don't know, it's demonic in my read of it.
And I know what you're saying. You see it as demonic. I see it, and I've written about this already. This is, to me, the way these Christian nationalists think is evil. Evil to me is denying people the dignity of life.
Exactly.
Based on who they hate. It's like, as I said, and I will keep going back to that, because I honestly think, I hate the word hate. I really do. Yeah. But I think in this case, you have to drive this home that, these people are just hate filled.
Right.
And they're trying to talk that, they're displaying Christian love. Well, if this is Christian love, I don't even want to know what Christian hate is.
Well, really. There's very little to hang the Christian part of Christian nationalism on.
Yes. What it is they believe in, as you wrote at the end of one of your posts, they worship the Bible. Which is something you won't do.
Some of them. Others are totally unfamiliar with it and may even hold it upside down in front of a church. That's a different story.
By the way, I have one right here.
I know. I see. It's a Gideon one, too.
Yes, it is. This was from St. Patrick's Day 2012, La Quinta, downtown Indianapolis.
All right. Excellent.
The one I'm using for my blog project, by the way, Alien Biblical on Twitter. I'm reading the Bible and writing about it. It's a little slow going right now because I'm still in the first five books, and it's a slog.
It's like
I'm using the NRSV. Pardon me?
That's you're doing a great job with it.
Thank you. High praise. I'm using the NRSV. I am not using the King James Version because I like to actually read the Bible and not, you know, try to figure out what it's what I'm reading. I'm not a big fan of the whole ETH endings on words.
Yes. I get thee on that.
But we, you know, yeah, you know, I'm reading the Bible and I'm familiar with the Bible. I was raised Catholic. Catholicism generally doesn't go too much into the Old Testament, and it's mainly the Gospels and the Epistles, and that's about it. So I'm familiar with the material, but when you really read it, when you sit down and you read it, and like I'm doing, analyze it and try to make some sense of it. Like I'm reading it from the point of view as you keep hearing certain, especially evangelical Christians say, you know, you have to read the Bible. All the answers are in there. And it's like, okay, I'm four books in and I haven't found an answer yet.
Right.
I get it. But I've also heard like, you have to be in the spirit to read it. It's like, no. It's a book, you know.
It is a book, and it's very revealing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a library of books, and it's hard to keep in mind that, especially those Old Testament books you're talking about, were written to be read in a certain context,
mm-hmm.
and it's not in the context of this is for public display,
right?
It was carved out for a specific kind of community with specific needs. And man, when you apply some of that stuff then to everybody's life and say, here you go, this is the wash. Here's 313 laws for you to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It leaves you scratching your head, no doubt.
That's why like I follow Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, who, by the way, is fantastic. I get her newsletter weekly, which, you know, is she's finally hit Leviticus because she wasn't ready to hit it. You know, she wasn't ready to go into it. I mean, she delayed it for like 6 months. I follow Dr. Josh Bowen, who is I don't want to get this wrong. He is an Old Testament scholar, and I follow Dr. Kip Davis, who a little less. He is a specialist in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and just some fantastic sources there. And it's helping me like learn, like first of all, you can't take the Old Testament word for word. There's a whole other volume that goes with it called the Talmud.
The Talmud, yes.
And that is the rabbinic. It's basically like the rabbinic supplement to help explain it in terms to the masses. And it's fascinating. So,
yeah, it's we're at a disadvantage, we being most of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a disadvantage of not having that kind of guidance,
right,
and influence. We're trying to grasp something that's this foreign, and you know, in time and space and culture and everything else from our as you can possibly be.
So what are the challenge, you know, you're a pastor of I'd say fairly liberal denomination of Protestantism.
Uh-huh.
What are your biggest challenges, you know, in this whole, you know, this whole world as it's happening? I mean,
there are a couple of things that I guess stand out to me just in the practice of ministry in our current setting.
Mm-hmm.
It's an observation I've accumulated over the years, but as liberal as my denomination may be, within it are whole congregations who may be very left-leaning or right-leaning,
right,
or centrist. And within any of those congregations, there may be a wide variety of opinions that lean left, right, or center. And that's like herding cats. Because those who are farthest left or right are most likely to be the fewest in number and make the most noise. And because our tradition is built around bringing these divergent people together around one common thing, which for us is the Eucharist,
mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I think deep inside there's a desire to come to terms with one another. I don't see Christian nationalism necessarily displayed on a regular basis in most of my tradition's churches.
Right.
But I do see and hear the voices of people who have listened to the loudest voices in our public sphere speaking up for some of the same ideologies that have become central to the Christian nationalist movement.
Right.
So it's not that they're necessarily presenting some package that we need to endorse to become a Christian nationalist church. It's that they are being influenced by language that they were raised on,
mm-hmm.
both as Americans and as Christians, that are being manipulated and entangled in ways that are not helpful to the body politic or to the body of the church. So the divisiveness we're seeing in Congress can play itself out in the life of the church in the same way, because we don't have rules saying you have to be a Democrat or Republican or whatever to be a part of our congregation. But once in a while, you can detect in conversations, the parking lot meetings that happen in mm-hmm. every organization, really, the kinds of conversations that are critical of people who may not meet the expectations of people on the extreme, particularly on the extreme right.
Right.
So I'm trying to say this as nicely as I can, but they're jerks that are a part of any church.
Mm-hmm.
And our particular denomination has a sense of free thinking about it.
Right.
Personal autonomy is honored. And unfortunately for all of us, to some degree, that can run off the scale and slide off of the table of reason, I guess.
Right. So, it's just mere coincidence we're discussing this the day before Ash Wednesday. That was because people will be hearing this Friday and beyond, but you know, we're getting into this time now. I don't follow a lot of the evangelicals on Twitter, but I do have them on a list. I won't say the name of the list. But it's time, because one of them is Pastor John Hagee, or Hagee.
Oh, yeah, Hagee.
And I feel like it's about time for him to start talking about blood.
Yeah.
Like, for 40 days of blood, and it's like, you know, I notice, you know, you mention it, but in the terms of the Eucharist, but, you know, you don't embrace the whole washed in the blood thing, you know, or at least not in the, like, I don't know how I'm trying to say this, but to me that just seems dark.
Well, sacrificial substitutionary atonement theories are a sliver of Christian theology that began to form really in mostly in the 8th century forward.
Right.
And was not a huge part of the early church's life. So as those formulas started coming into being, a lot of them sat on shelves and were really restricted to conversations and arguments within theological societies, such as seminaries.
Right.
They were not part of the everyday public conversations of any given church.
Right.
They were too busy trying to survive, pox and plague and everything else. So when the time came for various, I'm going to call them renewal movements, but you can call them whatever you want, such as the Protestant Reformation, which I still scratch my head about, but is the reality, and the schisms that have come from that.
Mm-hmm.
Those were times when these atonement theories started making their way to the surface again. And often as a cry for war, particularly in the Protestant Reformation, which was largely a political experience as much as it was a religious one. Martin Luther never desired to depart from the Catholic Church. It's just one of those things that happened. He was excommunicated.
Right.
But the same has been true of many other renewal movements that have taken place since that have spun off, for instance, the Pilgrim Fathers. If we think about what drove the religious life of the community that landed at Plymouth Rock, it was largely the politics of being able to practice their religion freely.
Mm-hmm.
That was problem that threw them out of Holland and made them wind up here in this, on this continent. Same was true for other kinds of departures from whatever the norm was in any given area. So yeah, that there is a thread of that's part of it. But I think the bigger issue is that whenever there is difficulty that causes huge division in any organization, but particularly in the life of the church, it is fundamentalism that is a reaction to the norm that creates the splinter. So when fundamentalism is at work in any body of the church, there's going to be a reaction. It is a reaction, rather, to the way things are. The fundamentalism in this nation that really took root is really a post-Civil War thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is what has fed the political machinery that leads us into the whole God and country spectrum of what has become Christian nationalism. It's existed in some form, I think, since our earliest days, the whole concept of manifest destiny.
Right.
We are the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get past that if you read history carefully.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've seen as modern Protestant fundamentalism has fueled the fires of those who are reactionary to what really has been the mainline body of the church, Catholic, Orthodox, Protestants, in the U.S., from its beginning. Fundamentalism is a reactionary movement,
mm-hmm.
and it's loud.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only way it can get attention, because it's not getting anything intelligent.
Right.
Just loud.
Uh-huh. Very.
Yeah.
To the point where it's drowning out, you know, the, you know, the calls for civility to, you know,
right.
to yeah. you know, when you or I say, you know, we want to see, you know, people treated equally or anything like that, the fundamentalists scream woke. And
right. Oh yeah.
And yet if you ask them what woke means, they don't have an answer.
Right.
It's just whatever they don't like.
Well, you know, if you look at the meaning of the word itself, it is a reflection of actually the whole canon of Scripture, but especially the Jesus that they claim to be following. The one who feeds the hungry and cures the sick,
mm-hmm.
gives a home to the homeless. That's the fulfillment of the justice called for throughout the Old Testament. It's the heart of who we are, who are religious folks in the Christian and Jewish traditions especially.
Right.
I don't know how you can get around that.
Well, I've seen a few things, you know, I've seen a few writings out there from modern, modern evangelicals, you know, claiming that Jesus wasn't this, you know, woke prophet, if you will,
right.
but, you know,
yeah.
was, and, you know, and they point to, I don't even know anymore.
Well, mostly I think they're drawing on a lot of the teachings that come out of the letters of Paul.
Oh, God, yes.
That are badly interpreted,
mm-hmm.
and formed into theologies that support the concept of Jesus didn't come to bring life into this world. He came to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how you see his coming to the world, whether it was a miraculous act or just the happenstance of a calling for this young rabbi, in Palestine, if his calling was just to die, then the Gospels really don't mean anything.
Right.
You're disregarding his teaching, his life.
Mm-hmm. And you're
for the sake of the atonement theory.
Yeah, you're replacing it with, you know, yeah.
Blood.
These letters to Paul, or letters from Paul to all these people, which, according to some scholars, more than a few of them are probably forgeries.
Forgeries or attribution.
Yes, yes.
Generous folks who spoke in the spirit that they thought was Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very much.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said very much. That's...
Yeah. So.
But if you want to start a war, they're great.
Oh, yeah. I have a long way to go, but boy, I can't wait to get to the letters of Paul. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's going to be fun. Because don't get me started on, you know, women keep silent.
Makes interesting conversations.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a driving factor, that whole patriarchal BS. Really fuels the fire for the Christian nationalist movement.
What's funny is that, you know, right now, three of the leaders of this movement here in America are Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, and Mary Miller.
Yes.
Obviously they decided to skip that section of Paul's letters and just say, no, we're not going to. This is definitely frightening. And the more I hear about it, the more frightening it gets. And especially since the history is, you know, the history does not give us, I hate saying it, you know, the history of this whole movement doesn't give me much hope.
No.
I mean, you know, if it came down to it, I could fake my way through. I mean, that's not a problem.
Sure.
Because I have realized one thing. Atheists can fake being Christian, you know, can fake being like evangelical Christians.
Sure.
Boy, but they suck at trying to pretend to be atheists. You can pick out the evangelical pretending to be an atheist from a mile away.
Yeah. No doubt.
Because there's only one thing it takes to be an atheist.
Right.
After that, it's all, you know, whatever. You know, I don't have to believe in, you know, I don't have to believe in science, but I do. You know, I accept it and, you know, I study it.
Right.
But, and, you know, well, to me, that's another huge problem is, you know, this wanting to bring religious teaching into public schools. Actually, it's actually even more than that. Yeah. They want to pretty much eradicate the public school system.
I grew up in the Madeline Murray O'Hare era.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite the thing in my little hometown when, you know, she was speaking so abrasively against prayer in public schools. And for most of the people that I knew, who were rooted in evangelical churches, they were terrified, absolutely terrified, that somehow they were going to lose traction, that Joe McCarthy really started.
Hmm.
I mean, we're talking about an era, if you look at the post-World War II boom, and all the all the things that went with that life, including a boom in church life,
right,
maybe not in effective teaching, but in, you know, masses and numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The whole picture of one nation under God.
Mm-hmm.
That under God wasn't added till after the war.
Oh, I know.
So
I'm very well aware of that.
The concept of all of that is new.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a time-honored history that was being ripped away when she suggested that prayer in public schools might be a transgression against our own Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that established clause, that doesn't happen.
I mean, this was, you know, and the idea was, you know, a teacher who is, you know, an agent of the government,
right?
You know, can't lead students in prayer. But if, you know, if a child in school decides they want to pray, that's fine.
Right.
But don't, you know, yeah, the school should not, the school should not be religious. If it's a public, if it's funded by taxpayer dollars,
right,
it should not be religious. Of course, that's going out the window now with the school voucher program.
Sure. And, because you're sitting on the edge of the Christian nationalist movement, those who are tending to add to those numbers of sympathizers,
mm-hmm.
which is still, I think, a significant number of people. I mean, we're talking about a lot.
Right.
They react to any movement of that sort as being a direct attack, to which fundamentally they have to respond, even with violence, which we've seen happen.
Mm.
So it's a dicey situation.
Right.
Nothing safe, I don't think, about our culture right now.
No. Nothing safe. I mean, you as a liberal Christian, you know, who does not agree with any of this movement, and me as a non-believer who obviously doesn't agree with any of this, you know, they're aiming to us.
Yeah. Well, I don't make a big display of
no
my political position. I do
me neither.
Make it very clear, and I think I have friends across the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
all the way across the spectrum, and I think they know mm-hmm. that my values and my understanding of faith and what I teach will not reflect the fundamentalist perspective.
Right.
That's behind Christian nationalism.
I mean, I have friends, I haven't talked to him in a while, but I have at least one friend who might be a bit of an extreme conspiracy theorist at least.
Yeah.
But like I said, I have not talked to him in a while. And you know, and I have all the way to the left. I have a friend who is a card carrying communist.
Uh-huh.
Which I'm gonna have to get him on this podcast at some point to actually talk about what is communism, because
mm-hmm.
boy, has that term been bastardized in the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's getting as much tire tread on it as socialism.
Yes.
And I think, you know, some explanation of, you know, exactly what is communism. You know, it's not the evil boogeyman in the room, people.
Yes.
Which means
something to me to hear that when you say it, juxtaposed against this Christian nationalist movement. Because if we had a Christian communist movement of some sort on the political scene or in church life or any of our communities, it could get really interesting.
Hmm.
Because there are good arguments for a lot of the roots of modern communism being linked to early church life.
Well,
and although it's not talked about a great deal, there's a clear picture in the Book of Acts that the early church held all things in common. They sold what they had,
mm-hmm.
took care of one another, and took care of the needy. And that would make an interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What might that look like?
Yeah, I will have to, you know, it's no mystery who it is. His Twitter handle is Doc Pinko, and he's been on this podcast several times.
Uh-huh.
So I'll have to have him on to talk about, you know, what communism is, because,
sure,
like I said, he teaches cultural English and cultural studies in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
And he's just, you know, he is a leftist.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know. I might have just insulted him there. He is a communist. I don't know what, you know, and well, he'll say, you know, even the leftmost politics in the U.S. is still right of center.
Sure. Yeah.
Even in, you know, the Liberal Party and the NDP in Canada are still right of center when you really, you know, when you look at the spectrum. And yeah, so I honestly don't think people know what they're talking about. When it comes to words like, you know, communism is used as a scare term. You know, again, it goes back to McCarthy in the 1940s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just became the boogeyman.
Sure.
But nobody actually knew what it was.
Well, and then our encounters with nations that were governed communistically and still,
mm-hmm,
to this day have been so extremely polarized, mm, or polarizing rather. You know, I don't know what you'd do with that, mm, because the image I think the public holds of communism is not much less caricatured than the image that the non-church-going public often holds of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Because the voices that have carried the loudest have not been helpful,
no,
or effective at all.
No, not at all. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, the people who talk the calmest and, you know, make the most sense are drowned out.
Sure. Yeah.
And that is a, you know, I'm just, again, I, you know, this is just to me kind of frightening. Another item that keeps coming up, and it came up a lot here in Ohio when during the Republican primary for the Senate, and oh my God, I can't remember his name now. I don't want to remember his name. Josh Mandel.
Oh, yes.
Now he is. He is Jewish, by faith, by birth and by faith, and yet he uses this term, and Rabbi Ruttenberg that I follow brought up a very good point about this term, Judeo-Christian. Judeo-Christian is not an inclusive term.
No, it's not.
It's an exclusive term,
yes,
to eliminate the third Abrahamic religion,
yes,
which is of course Islam, and that's why you will hear, you know, you'll hear like a Dennis Prager, who is also Jewish, yes, talk about Judeo-Christian values.
Yes,
they're just saying, you know, non-Islamic.
They are, and I think more than that, the term as it evolved, I think has come to mean a specific political ideology.
Yes, that
it certainly, yeah, has no religious value at all.
No.
None. I mean, I look back on religious history that I'm familiar with, which does not include Islam, other than the very basic facts.
Right.
But particularly the rise of Judaism and the rise of Christianity, they're almost simultaneous. Mm-hmm. Modern Judaism was born at the same time the church was born.
Right.
So when you look at the texts that they're drawing from, that's really secondary to the evolution of what these two movements, religions, whatever you want to call them,
right,
became. They were tied to their cultures in unique ways, but they evolved rather simultaneously. And I think they got co-opted in a big way in, you know, the prior century.
Right.
And that terminology, I mean, Judeo-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a term of modernity that has nothing to do with
Judaism or Christianity.
No. Yeah, that's another way of saying the roots of Christian nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense.
Oh, there's a lot to digest.
Yeah.
So I'm trying, you know, I don't even know where to go from here. No, I mean,
it's all right.
I think we're at a good, stopping point here. Love to have you back.
Thank you. It's kind of you to have me.
I normally tell people where they can find you on the internet, but I also want, you know, what message would you give to people, you know, as a pastor of a church, you know, and, you know, how to explain, you know, basically how to avoid, you know, this Christian nationalism, this awful. Ugh. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to sound too blasé about it, but I think if you think about it as something that excites some part of you, that tickles something in you that you think you need to pursue, put the brakes on enough to actually survey what that is. I'm trying to encourage people to slow down the rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
because the rhetoric is what's getting us into the division we have in our body politic.
Right.
But it's also what's driving a movement that I think is far away from where most thinking people really want to be.
Right.
And I don't think rationalism is the answer to everything, but I think we've been given reasoning powers for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to dig a little deeper than what MTG and some of her colleagues might.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know that I have advice other than I wouldn't be afraid of it ultimately, because I think at some point, the voice of reason will prevail. I just hope there's not too much bloodshed before that happens.
Same. We've already. Same here.
Yeah.
So, where can people find you on the internet? You know, if they want to find you,
you're most welcome to look us up at NECC, North Eaton Christian Church, NECC Disciples, DISCIPLES.com.
Excellent. And do you want to give out your personal Twitter account or?
Oh, just look up Skin of My Teeth.
There you go. I'll put a link in the description.
Thanks. That's great. Yeah. My personal Twitter's not that exciting.
Right.
I'm very random of even going on and off of it.
Listen, he follows me on Twitter. That's all you need to know.
That's right. That's all that counts.
You could find me at Alien CG. You could find the podcast at Illuminati Pod. Of course, you could find my my Bible study at Alien Biblical on Twitter and bible.aliencg.com. You could also find this podcast at IlluminatiSocialClub.com. David, thank you for coming in and spending some time with us and scaring the bejesus out of us.
Thank you, Jason. I'm always happy to help.
And ladies and gentlemen, as Madeline Murray O'Hare once said, don't believe everything you hear on the internet. Have a good week.